I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to a Weird News Roundup from the Something Offbeat podcast. We feature off-the-wall news from Odyssey stations across the nation. This week, we're diving into one of our favorite topics, aliens. While extraterrestrial life is often thought of as a sort of fringe topic, two U.S. presidents have recently been talking about it, so we had to get in on the fun. We're also going to get a bit darker than usual this week with some talk about death. We'll check in on an ongoing series from one of Odyssey's stations, WWJ News Radio in Detroit. They're aiming to reshape discussions about the afterlife and put a spotlight this week on some unusual alternatives to traditional burials. Then we'll get into some internet drama that came out following the death of Grey's Anatomy and Euphoria star Eric Dane. We're going to listen in on a discussion about when it's ever okay to speak ill of the dead. Now, to get things started, we're headed to Dexter, Michigan. That's where a famous UFO sighting was reported 60 years ago. Sam Maranto, Great Lakes director of the Mutual UFO Network, joined WWJ News Radio this week to explain what went down that fateful night in 1966.
The Dexter swamp gas case is just truly one of the most remarkable mass sightings in UFO history, for actually history in general, the United States. We had objects flying in and about the Midwest, and not just here, all the way down in Australia. There were cases early in Tully, a town of Tully, and in Westall, where 200 some students and teachers seen these objects. They landed. There was physical trace evidence. There was, and it seems as though it was American intelligence officers and armed forces there, in conjunction with local police. So there, this was an ongoing event over there, but then soon to follow in Michigan. And what happened in Michigan, in one location in particular, a gentleman's farm by the name of Frank Manor, and that's with two N's, who had a large family, and his dogs were barking, and they were trying to figure out what was the cause of it. They went outside on the porch, and they seen something coming down at a 45-degree angle. Initially, it looked like a meteorite, but then what was a red object stopped over the trees in the distance on their property and turned, I believe he said, blue and white. Him and his son went out there to take a peek at it, and it was over a swampy area or a wetland, but it was part of their property. And the other family members came out and seen it. Police officers seen it. And to say the least, this became a big hullabaloo out there. And many people seen it. And it was hundreds, I would say. And then, of course, what became popular was the Hillsdale College co-eds that seen a similar object over an area called the Arbors on the property of the college. And there were some groundskeepers that seen it. And I forgot how many total. But this case was very well documented, and what had happened was the community at large was very concerned about it and asked the Air Force to take a peek at it. Project Blue Book was going on at that time, so they summoned, of course, J. Allen Hynek, the astrophysicist who was very, very involved in the study of UFOs, in charge of project, in working with Charger's Project Blue Book. And he came in there, even though he had a broken jaw, he came in and was asked to basically quell this best as possible. The whole idea was this was just getting too out of hand, and they didn't want it to get too far. And so in his interview, he had mentioned that this as one of the possibilities of what may have been seen, he alluded to a phenomena known as swamp gas, where you'd have this illumination of various that's methane, you know, basically decomposition earlier in or later in the year when things start thawing out, or I say later in the winter. So right before spring, you do have these occurrences that can account for something like that. He mentioned it as being a probability, but not being the explanation. The news took it and ran with it, and swamp gas was born.
Former President Barack Obama didn't specifically mention the Dexter incident during a recent interview on Brian Tyler Cohen's podcast. However, he did make a stir by saying he thinks aliens are real, though he clarified that he had no information about them actually contacting Earth. Then current President Donald Trump said that he would order the release of files about UFOs. It's been a big month for aliens, to say the least. So we're wondering, what really are the chances of humans and extraterrestrial life meeting? And what would it look like? Well, an expert joined Tommy Tucker on WWL Radio in New Orleans this week to explain.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Gillian Scudder joins us now, associate professor of physics and astronomy at Oberlin College and an author of three books on astronomy for the general public, including The Milky Way Smells Like, what was it?
Rum and raspberries.
Rum and raspberries. So tell me your thoughts when you heard this conversation or with President Obama and what he said. And the first thing I thought of was it the Enrique, the Fermi paradox? What am I talking about?
Yeah, the Fermi paradox is one of them. And the idea is just that if there's lots of intelligent life out there, then why haven't we heard from them? And usually the answer is you're underestimating how big space is. Mm-hmm. It is unfortunately extremely large. So
that goes to what former President Obama said, that statistically the universe is so fast that the odds are good that there's life out there, which would contradict the Fermi paradox.
So it wouldn't contradict it because of the distances involved in communication. Mm-hmm. So the further away you get, or the larger volume you look at, the more planets you have and the more chances you have for something interesting to happen. But the further away you are, the less likely we are to be able to ever notice them or hear from them, because the time it takes for light to travel that distance starts to become thousands or hundreds of thousands of years.
Why do we always presume that they would be more advanced than we are? Because they came to us, but they could have... I guess that's the rationale behind it?
Yeah, basically is, well, we can't travel the stars at that kind of distances. So if any civilization were able to do that, they would have to be more technologically advanced than we currently are. We have been looking for a while for interesting signals, and we've sent out a few messages, but we haven't heard any responses. What we have heard is weird things happening in space that gets people very excited, but it has never turned out to be any kind of advanced civilization or even unadvanced civilization.
Like what kind of weird things?
So when neutron stars were first discovered, these are very, very compact objects. They form at the end of a star's life, and they can the radio. And so when they were first detected, it was this really weird signal that repeated every 3 seconds or so. And there's this very famous in astronomical circles anyhow, notation that they made on the first detection of that blinking 3-second signal of just LGM, which stood for Little Green Men, mm-hmm. which was a joke at the time. And so since then, we've learned that, oh, yes, these are actually just very rapidly spinning X stars. But they initially had this really repeated regular signal, which was kind of exciting and interesting. And so now we know what they are. But at the time, it was very exciting to be like, oh, what is that?
You can't see it, right? So you base it on mathematical formulas, or how do you know?
Sometimes we can see it, and then we can use our understanding of how light works and how the atoms interact with light to figure out what is there. So one of our most powerful signals is just looking at the light that we receive from different objects in outer space. And so that continues, light goes out to the radio waves and it goes up to gamma radiation. And so we can interpret that light pretty well to tell us like, oh, there's, you know, carbon dioxide over here, or there's oxygen here, or there's water over here. But then when we're trying to interpret it in detail, then often you do have to have a model of some kind that helps you fill in the gaps between what we've seen and what we can observe and what we think might be creating that light.
How far away have we from how far away have we observed things?
Well, our oldest light in the universe came from 380,000 years after the Big Bang, so pretty far back. But if you're looking for planets, then only within our own galaxy, more or less. So it really depends on what you're trying to look for.
With life, there also comes death. After the break, we're going to learn about new ways people are facing the transition. Stay tuned. Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Weird News from Odyssey's Something Offbeat. You're listening to a Weird News Roundup presented by the Something Offbeat podcast from Odyssey. More than 3 million people die in the U.S. every year. It's not a pleasant thing to think about. When people die, we lose connection, knowledge, love, and more. In fact, it's so hard to think about that people often avoid talking about death altogether. WWJ News Radio's Tim Pamplin is on a mission to open up discussion around death in a new series called The Cost of Saying Goodbye. He discussed it with Tracy McCaskill this week.
And Tim, talk to us about this. You know, this series, it's about more than cultural change and not just funerals, correct?
That's right, Tracy. Good afternoon. We're living through a cultural and generational shift in how people think about many things nowadays, like tradition, religion, money, and identity. Funerals are just where all of that collides in a very visible way. Attitudes are changing, and like so much these days, these changes are happening really rather quickly, Tracy.
So Americans don't talk about death, and that silence does have consequences, right?
It certainly does. When families avoid the conversation, it creates emotional stress, financial strain, and conflict at the worst possible moment. You know, this series is about opening that door, starting the conversation now. We stayed away from what the funeral directors call the final disposition, you know, burial, traditional cremation. There's options now, water cremation. Its technical name is alkaline hydrolysis. It's more environmentally friendly. And then there's a push over in Newaygo County near Grand Rapids for the state's first decomposition forest. That's about as natural and as green as you can get. You get a burlap sack placed under an oak tree, and that's that. But back to your question, the ultimate goal of the series, hopefully it serves as a conversation starter, Tracy, so families aren't burdened with the additional stress when a loved one does pass away. As the expression goes, we don't plan to fail, you fail to plan. Hopefully a few conversations will be had, and these conversations will provide a clearer pathway for when that time comes.
Here are some clips from The Cost of Saying Goodbye.
We start in Detroit, on the west side, along Schaefer Avenue, at James H. Cole Home for Funerals. They've been in business for 107 years. India Ramsey is a funeral director and a mortician there, and she says the legacy model, where a family uses a funeral home simply because their grandfather did, is fading.
They don't go off a tradition anymore.
Ramsey says it's the millennial generation now sitting at the arrangement table, and they aren't looking for standard. They're looking for a reflection of a life lived.
we see it all. People request all kinds of everything when it comes to personalization for funeral services. So it's definitely not your standard. Nothing is black and white anymore. You know, we see all kinds of everything. We see the motorcycle hearses. We see the horse and carriage, the dove services. People wrap the caskets now in all kinds of pictures and collages of their loved ones. So we see a lot. It's not, you know, it's not the traditional way anymore.
What if the final gift isn't a ceremony at all? In Rochester, at the Oakland University William Beaumont School of Medicine, death is becoming a cornerstone of education. Dr. Mali Baramkala is the founding director of their body donation program.
People can donate their entire body to science, more specifically for medical schools, where students can learn through dissection in the first year of the medical school.
For many donors, this is a way to bypass the high costs of the funeral industry. The program covers the final expenses, but Dr. Baramkala sees something deeper in the families who sign up. He sees it as a form of living on through others. And there's also a unique physical legacy here too. Once the medical study is complete, the university handles the cremation. If the family doesn't wish to have the remains returned, the university provides a permanent, dignified resting place in a dedicated mausoleum at the Avon Cemetery up in Rochester.
These donations hugely impact our students' lives because they start with this dissection, right? And then that's what they learn from this, which they remember for the rest of their life. Because I was talking to a physician the other day, and she still remembers the dissection that she did almost like 40 years ago.
It turns a moment of loss into a permanent contribution, a legacy to Michigan's healthcare future, and anchored by that physical public space in the Rochester Cemetery.
Among the living, there are also questions of etiquette when people pass away. In particular, it can be challenging for some after someone they didn't get along with passes. The Dana and Parks podcast out of KMBZ in Kansas City tackled one of these cases this week. After the death of actor Eric Dane at the age of 53, he was suffering from ALS, a progressive neurological disorder, at the time of his death.
So Grey's Anatomy extra Laura Toll has dubbed Eric Dane, Dr. McSteamy or whatever, an evil bully in the days after his tragic death.
Wow.
And fans of Grey's Anatomy are not happy. The actress went on a scathing tirade via Threads last week, calling the actor a coward, a jerk,
ooh,
a narcissist,
ooh,
an abuser, and claimed that she got him written off the medical drama in 2012. Quoting here from Laura Toll, "I am why he was fired from Grey's. I called Shonda Rhimes' assistant 2 weeks before they announced his termination. Rhimes, I doubt, will ever admit that."
Let me ask you this. He's not here to defend himself.
Clearly.
I think the wider topic here is, at what point, if you are going to speak ill of the dead, do you do so? To me, an extra on the set of Grey's Anatomy, maybe they knew each other, maybe they didn't. I mean, we've seen this in obituaries, Scott, where an abusive mother finally passes away, abused the kids their entire lives. And you will see these obituaries where the kids say, "We are glad she's gone. The world is actually a better place with her not here." And when it's a family member, I think it's awkward when we see it. But people are starting to kind of be a little more
cringeworthy,
transparent. But we're starting to see it. Like,
okay.
I'm going to air the grievances in three paragraphs in the local newspaper, right? Hmm. And it does make us cringe. This feels vindictive and
bitter,
unnecessary. This is, and I hate to say it, he might have been a bully to her, behaved poorly toward her. No one has any idea who this woman is, and so
I've never heard of her.
For
in my
her
life.
To come out in this way so soon after his death. You know, he's left behind two daughters. And
okay.
What's the point?
Well, wait a minute. I don't think there is a point. But if you're going to say something negative about the dead, when is the proper amount of time to wait?
Well, it depends on who it is. I think if it is very close to you, and it's like the example I gave with an abusive mother or father, where those around you are going to know they were estranged and this is why. I think it's okay to say, I have mixed feelings now that this person has passed because of all of the trauma and the hurt.
Well, but
if it's someone like O.J. Simpson, I remember saying, good riddance, you murdered your wife and Ron Goldman. Bye. But if it's someone that's just, you casually knew them on set and felt slighted by them, you don't. You just, it's better not to say anything at all.
But there are people who have passed in my life. And I don't mean passed as in died. I mean, have passed through my life, mm-hmm. okay? Who are still very much alive, whom I do not have any respect for anymore.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm sure there's somebody in your life who's walked through your life. You were close at one point.
Yeah.
And things just went south. When and if they die before me, I will say nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Because what's the point?
What's the point? What am I adding to their story? They did me wrong. They did me dirty. They know who they are.
Someone wrote of her words, even if every word you speak is true, now is not the time to say it.
You look like a smaller person.
It smacks of indecency toward his family. Mm-hmm. I hope his daughters never see the vitriol you are spewing.
Yeah.
Could it be that she was forced to sign an NDA of some kind and now she feels emboldened to tell her story?
Maybe.
What?
But again, what for what purpose? No one knows who this woman is.
If she was abused by him, we often talk about women who come out with their story many years later and we never balk at that. Just because he was beloved, she's not allowed to share that abuse.
But she never claimed that she was abused by him. She claimed that he was a bully. And now you might call that abuse.
I was going to say, I think there's a fine line between those
right.
two.
I think you're probably right, Sam.
She pointed out she initially slammed him years before he lost his battle to ALS, publishing an essay in the magazine Medium back in June of 2018. Okay. She clearly does not like Eric Dane for whatever reason.
Obviously.
There are times where it's best just to say nothing at all.
Thank you so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup from the Something Offbeat podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to WWJ News Radio in Detroit, Tommy Tucker out of WWL in New Orleans, and the Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City. You can find these shows and the Something Offbeat podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.